Welcome to your personalized deep dive. You sent a self-discipline for success. So clearly you're ready to tackle those goals. And this book seems like the perfect roadmap. But who wants to wade through pages and pages when we can distill it down to the juiciest bits? That's what we're here for. And trust me, there are some seriously counterintuitive ideas in here. Did you know self-discipline is less about white-knuckling your way to the finish line and more about understanding how your brain works?
It's fascinating how the book really dismantles that whole willpower is everything myth. It's more about working with your brain's natural tendencies, not fighting against them.
Okay, so less about being a superhero and more about being a brain whisperer. Amen to that. But before we get too deep, let's start with the basics. What exactly is self-discipline according to this book?
It defines self-discipline as the ability to control your impulses and actions, even when faced with temptations or obstacles. But the key distinction it makes is between motivation, which is fleeting and unreliable, and self-discipline, which is about consistently doing what needs to be done, regardless of how you feel in the moment.
So it's less about waiting for that burst of inspiration and more about showing up, even when you'd rather be doing literally anything else.
Yeah.
That sounds challenging, to say the least.
It is. But the book argues that this consistent action is the key to success. It gives the example of setting clear, achievable goals. Mm-hmm. It's like having a destination on a map. If you don't know where you're going, it's easy to get lost along the way.
But isn't relying on routines too rigid? I mean, life throws curveballs, things change. How do you balance structure with spontaneity?
That's a great question. And the book actually addresses that concern. It's not about creating a rigid, unbreakable schedule, but about building a flexible framework that provides a sense of stability while allowing for adjustments as needed.
So more like guidelines than hard and fast rules. That makes me feel better.
Yeah.
But where do routines fit into all of this? The book talks a lot about routine equals self-discipline, but honestly, my mornings are more like a chaotic scramble than a Zen ritual.
The book's point is that routines aren't about being robotic. They're about freeing up mental energy. Think about it. If you have a set morning routine, you're not wasting mental energy deciding what to eat for breakfast or what to wear. Those decisions are already made, leaving you with more bandwidth for the important stuff.
Okay, I see how that could be a game changer. It's like putting your brain on autopilot for those everyday tasks, mm-hmm. so you can focus on the bigger picture. But what about when things get tough? We've got the goals, we've got the routines, but what about when we hit a wall?
That's where the book's emphasis on building mental toughness comes in. It defines mental toughness as the ability to persist through difficulties, which is absolutely essential for maintaining self-discipline when you're faced with setbacks, distractions, or just plain old lack of motivation.
So it's like having that inner strength to keep going, even when you want to throw in the towel.
Yeah.
But how do you actually build that mental toughness? It sounds kind of abstract.
Think of it like a muscle that needs to be trained. The book dives into techniques like reframing negative thoughts. Instead of saying, I can't do this, you challenge that thought with, this is tough, but I'm capable of figuring it out. It also emphasizes practicing gratitude, focusing on what you do have instead of what you lack.
So it's not about ignoring the negative, but about shifting your perspective to a more empowering one. It's about building that mental resilience. That makes sense. But let's be real. One of the biggest hurdles to self-discipline for me, and I'm guessing a lot of people, is procrastination. How does the book tackle this beast?
It acknowledges that procrastination is a major obstacle and delves into the psychology behind it. We often procrastinate because we fear failure, feel overwhelmed, or simply lack motivation. But the book offers some practical strategies to combat it, like breaking tasks down into smaller, more manageable steps. It also suggests using the 2-minute rule. Mm-hmm. If a task takes less than 2 minutes, do it immediately. It's about taking action instead of getting stuck in analysis paralysis.
Okay, I like that. It's about building momentum, right? Like once you start taking those small actions, it's easier to keep the ball rolling. But what about accountability? Does the book touch on that? Because sometimes I feel like I need that external push to stay on track.
Absolutely. It dedicates a whole section to the power of accountability. It explores various methods, from finding an accountability partner to tracking your progress visually to using apps that help you stay on target.
I've tried accountability partners before, but sometimes it can feel like just another thing on my to-do list. What I found helpful is tracking my progress. There's something so satisfying about seeing those small wins add up over time.
That's a great point, and the book highlights that as well. Visualizing your progress can be incredibly motivating. It's a tangible reminder of your commitment and all the steps you're taking to achieve your goals.
It's like turning those abstract goals into something concrete that you can actually see and track. It makes the whole process feel less overwhelming.
And speaking of making things less overwhelming, that really ties into the book's emphasis on mastering focus. Because let's face it, staying focused is like trying to meditate in a hurricane with all the distractions we face these days.
Seriously, my phone is basically a portal to a never-ending stream of distractions. So how do we even begin to cultivate focus when everything's vying for our attention?
The book dives deep into this, explaining how focus is a key component of self-discipline. It's not just about saying no to distractions, but about actively training your mind to concentrate on what's truly important. It compares it to a muscle that needs to be strengthened through practice.
So are we talking meditation, mindfulness? Give me the lowdown. What kind of techniques does the book recommend for enhancing focus?
It suggests a range of techniques, from something as simple as eliminating distractions in your environment to more structured methods like the Pomodoro technique, where you work in focused bursts followed by short breaks.
The Pomodoro technique. Interesting. I've heard of it. But I've always been skeptical. Does it really work? Have you tried it?
I actually use it quite often, especially when I have a large task that feels overwhelming. It helps me break down the work into manageable chunks and maintain my focus for longer periods. It's amazing how much you can accomplish when you eliminate those distractions and really concentrate on the task at hand.
Okay. You've convinced me. I'm adding try the Pomodoro technique to my to-do list. But even with the best techniques, managing those temptations, particularly instant gratification, feels like a constant battle.
That's a struggle we all face, right? The book acknowledges how difficult it is to stay focused in today's world with constant notifications and the allure of instant gratification everywhere we turn. But it offers some strategies for managing these temptations instead of simply trying to resist them with willpower alone.
So less about white-knuckling it and more about outsmarting the temptation. I'm all ears. What are some of these strategies?
One of the key ideas is to identify your specific temptations and then create systems to minimize their impact. For example, if social media is a major distraction for you, maybe schedule specific times to check it instead of mindlessly scrolling whenever you have a free moment.
That's brilliant. It's about taking control. Instead of letting the temptation control you, instead of relying on willpower in the moment, you're setting yourself up for success in advance. But all this talk about focus and discipline makes me wonder about the role of self-care. Does the book address that? Because it seems like self-care is often seen as the opposite of discipline. Like, you're being indulgent if you take time for yourself.
You've hit on a crucial point. The book actually dedicates a whole chapter to self-care and motivation, emphasizing that self-care isn't selfish, it's essential. It's not about choosing between discipline and self-care, but about recognizing that they work together.
Okay. I'm so glad to hear the book validates self-care. But how does it actually enhance our ability to be disciplined? What kind of self-care does it recommend?
It emphasizes the importance of getting enough sleep, eating nutritious foods, and engaging in regular physical activity. It also highlights the importance of managing stress through techniques like mindfulness, meditation, or spending time in nature. It's about recognizing that you can't pour from an empty cup. You need to take care of yourself to have the energy and focus to pursue your goals.
It's like that airplane oxygen mask analogy, right? You put on your own mask first before you can help others. But speaking of challenges, what about setbacks?
Yeah.
Even with the best self-care routine, life happens, and we're bound to stumble along the way. How does the book address overcoming those inevitable setbacks?
It takes a very realistic approach, acknowledging that setbacks are a natural part of any journey, and it's how we handle them that determines our ultimate success. It's not about avoiding setbacks altogether, which is impossible, but about developing the resilience to bounce back from them.
So it's less about never falling down and more about getting back up stronger each time. What kind of strategies does it suggest for cultivating that resilience?
The book encourages us to view setbacks not as failures, but as valuable learning experiences. It's about reframing those negative experiences as opportunities for growth and using them to fuel our determination.
So instead of getting discouraged and giving up, we learn from our mistakes and come back even stronger. That's a much more empowering way to look at setbacks. But how do we stay motivated when those setbacks feel overwhelming, especially when we're in it for the long haul?
That's where the book's emphasis on long-term thinking comes in. It's about training your mind to focus on the bigger picture and delay gratification for even greater rewards down the line.
Easier said than done in our world of instant gratification. But I'm intrigued. What are some specific strategies the book offers for developing that long-term vision?
It highlights the power of visualizing your future self and using that vision to guide your present actions. It suggests techniques like creating vision boards or writing down your goals and reviewing them regularly. It's about keeping that end goal in mind, even when the day-to-day feels challenging.
It's like having that North Star to guide you, even when the seas are rough. But I have to admit, sometimes it's easy to get caught up in self-criticism when things don't go as planned. Does the book address that negative self-talk? Because I think that can be a huge obstacle to self-discipline.
You're absolutely right. The book emphasizes self-compassion and the importance of being kind to ourselves, especially when we stumble. It's not about beating ourselves up for mistakes, but about recognizing that we're human and learning from those experiences.
So it's about treating ourselves with the same kindness and understanding that we would offer a friend who's struggling. I love that. But how do we actually shift that inner dialogue from self-criticism to self-compassion?
It's about becoming aware of those negative thought patterns.
Yeah.
And actively challenging them. Instead of saying things like, I'm such a failure, It's about reframing those thoughts to something more supportive, like, I made a mistake, but I can learn from it and do better next time.
It's about being our own best cheerleader instead of our worst critic. But all this talk about the mental side of things makes me wonder about the physical aspect. Does the book address the importance of physical well-being for self-discipline?
It absolutely does. It emphasizes that our physical and mental health are interconnected, and that taking care of our bodies is crucial for maintaining the energy and focus we need to stay disciplined.
So it's not just about willpower and mindset. It's about creating a holistic lifestyle that supports our goals.
Exactly. The book dives into the importance of getting enough sleep, eating nourishing foods, engaging in regular physical activity, and managing stress levels. It's about recognizing that self-discipline is not about deprivation, but about making choices that fuel our well-being on all levels.
It's like building a strong foundation for a house. You can't expect it to stand tall if the foundation is weak. It's loving all these insights. It's clear that self-discipline is much more nuanced than just forcing ourselves to do things we don't want to do.
And building on that idea of a solid foundation, the book goes even deeper, exploring the fascinating world of habit formation. It's like taking all these self-discipline concepts and making them automatic, almost like second nature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that. Who wouldn't want to make those positive changes stick without having to constantly think about them? But how does that even work? Can we really reprogram our brains to make self-discipline a habit?
The book delves into the science of habit formation, breaking down the habit loop, the cue, the routine, and the reward. It explains how understanding this loop allows us to consciously build new positive habits and dismantle those pesky, unhelpful ones.
So it's like hacking the system, understanding the mechanics of how habits form, and then using that knowledge to our advantage. I love that. But I need a concrete example. How would we apply this habit loop to starting a regular exercise routine?
Let's say your goal is to exercise every morning. The cue could be as simple as laying out your workout clothes the night before. The routine is the actual workout itself. And the reward could be that post-workout endorphin rush. Or maybe listening to your favorite podcast while you exercise.
So by consistently linking those three elements, the cue, the routine, and the reward bush, you're reinforcing that habit loop, making it more likely to stick. It's like training your brain to crave that workout.
Exactly. And the book emphasizes starting small. Don't try to overhaul your entire life overnight. Focus on building one small habit at a time. And once it becomes automatic, you can add another.
It's like those Russian nesting dolls.
Yeah.
Building those habits one layer at a time until you have this whole set of positive behaviors. But what about those times when we feel stuck, like we're just going through the motions? Does the book touch on finding that sense of flow, that state where we're completely absorbed in what we're doing?
It does. It dedicates a whole section to the concept of flow state, that almost magical feeling where time seems to disappear and you're completely immersed in the task at hand.
I've definitely experienced that before, but it always feels so elusive, like catching lightning in a bottle. Can we actually cultivate that flow state intentionally, or is it just something that happens by chance?
The book suggests that we can create conditions that make flow more likely. It highlights the importance of choosing activities that align with our skills and interests, setting clear goals for the task, and eliminating distractions to create a space conducive to deep focus.
So it's about finding that sweet spot where the challenge is just right, not too easy, not too hard, and where we can fully engage our skills and passions. But beyond specific techniques or strategies, does the book address the bigger picture, the why, behind our desire for self-discipline?
Absolutely. The book delves into the importance of finding your purpose and how that can be a driving force for self-discipline. It argues that when you connect your actions to a larger purpose, it gives you a sense of meaning and motivation that transcends the day-to-day grind.
So it's not just about achieving goals for the sake of achievement, but about contributing to something bigger than ourselves. It's about aligning our actions with our values and the impact we want to have on the world.
Exactly. It's about finding that deeper why that fuels our commitment and helps us stay resilient in the face of challenges.
This has been such an insightful deep dive. We've uncovered so many practical strategies and thought-provoking ideas, from habit formation and focus techniques to cultivating resilience and connecting with our purpose. It feels like we've been given a toolkit for not just achieving our goals, but for living a more intentional and fulfilling life.
And the beauty of it is that self-discipline is not a destination, but a lifelong journey of growth and self-discovery. It's about continually striving to be the best versions of ourselves, one small step at a time.
Well said. And for our listener, who's clearly on this journey of self-improvement, what's one small step you can take today to move closer to those goals? What's one tiny action inspired by this book that you can commit to right now? Remember, progress over perfection. Each step, no matter how small, is a victory worth celebrating.
And remember, self-discipline is not about deprivation or punishment, but about empowerment. It's about giving yourself the tools to create the life you truly desire.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with another fascinating topic to explore. Until then, keep striving, keep growing, and keep celebrating those small wins along the way.